The following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
When Nicole Sandler sits down to do her show, she's the producer, booking the guests, pulling the audio, planning the show, the engineer, running the controls, troubleshooting any problems, playing the sounds, calling the guests, and she's the webmaster, writing the blog, posting the podcast, maintaining the website, not to mention the host, interviewing the guests, explaining the issues, giving opinions, and calling out the bad guys. And then you get the Nicole Sandler Show on NicoleSandler.com.
And you wonder why things often go wrong. that explains it all. All right. Welcome to a Thursday. Thank you for bearing with me yesterday. I hope you were entertained by my little jaunt down memory lane. It's kind of weird going back 30 years and getting into that mindset. I mean, it was fun. The work that I did back then was just a whole lot of fun. But now that it's over, now that I did the interview, I have a feeling that that's probably the last time I'll speak with Mark Thompson. Labor saying more M&B. It was fun, right? But could you tell? Look, I know he's doing this book tour and he's been busy. But boy, from the moment he came on, it didn't seem like he was really happy to be here. I had fun. That's okay. But you see, what I got to at the very end, and I tried to good-naturedly kid him about the fact that I was left out of his book. So, I read a passage from page 80 where he said, we were standing in our producer's office. And I'm like, that was me. That was me. I did get one mention at the very end. I don't know if I have it in here anymore. I probably tossed it, frankly. I don't know where it is. But at the very end, oh no, here it is. He said, in the thank yous, in the acknowledgement section, he goes into, sorry, we're not going to stay on this very long. Just give me a moment because I got to get it out. I just got to get it out. In the acknowledgements, he says, thank yous to, let me see if I can find it. This is after he basically mentioned everybody else who worked at the show on the show at the same time that I did. He gets to, he goes into a whole passage about their original producer. He says, Ann worked for the creative services department when we first started, and she liked what we were trying to do and offered a helping hand without pay. She would arrive before us each morning and act as our producer. I don't think she had ever been around anything quite like us, which is what I think attracted her. Both Ann and Chuck, who was our news guy, are in my personal hall of fame. They both supported us when we needed it most. Well, let me tell you, when I was hired, neither one of them had a kind word to say about their original producer, Anne. And in fact, I didn't play it, but I could have. In the video that I shared from that whole Elvis Bob thing, when we were going through the car wash, somebody asked what happened to Anne, because I'd only been there a couple of months at the time. And Mark said, I think she's sitting in the corner of her bedroom, flicking the lights on and off. He just railed into her. Oh, we made it possible for her to find another job. Honestly, he said that. So, so then he goes on, and then a few, the next page over. Other than Anne, Nicole Sandler, Frank Murphy, Johnny Vega, Rosemary Jimenez, and Ted Lakis all served as our producers throughout our 25 years. I always refer to the Johnny Vega stint as the Vega months. And Ted was with us the longest and proved very dependable. Thank you all. That's the mention I get. Let me just say one last thing on this. After I got there, when I was there maybe 6 months, we hit number one. We beat Rick Dees, who was the reigning morning king of Los Angeles at the time. And then Howard Stern displaced us from number one. The only time they ever hit number one was when I was there. That's when they were red hot. So since he didn't want to give me the credit that I deserve, I'll take it and say, I deserved so much credit. He took credit in the book for making producing the Christmas shows and the birthday shows. And you know, he'd talk about all the work that went into them and didn't mention me. So, okay. So there we go. So now I'm done. I will still enjoy listening to the bits, to the work that we did when I was there. But as I told him, the show ended for me the day I left, the end of June of 1994. I never listened again. So, for good reason. Anyway, you were perceived as a threat by you, by them. Thank you. Okay, now on to the more important things. Memo to Ron DeSantis. If you want to know what freedom looks like, it's Brittany Griner. She is a free woman now. I don't know if she's landed yet in San Antonio. Probably not, but that's where she will be landing. And, this is what happened this morning.
Moments ago, standing together with her wife, Sherelle, in the Oval Office, I spoke with Brittany Griner. She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along. This is a day we've worked toward for a long time. We never stopped pushing for her release. It took painstaking and intense negotiations, and I want to thank all the hardworking public servants across my administration who worked tirelessly to secure her release. I also want to thank the UAE for helping us facilitate Brittany's return, because that's where she landed. These past few months have been hell for Brittany and for Charlie and her entire family and all her teammates back home. People all across the country have learned about Brittany's story, advocated for her release, stood with her throughout this terrible ordeal. And I know that support meant a lot to her family. I'm glad to be able to say that Brittany's in good spirits. She's relieved to finally be heading home. And
can
the fact remains
her?
That she's lost months of her life,
experienced
the needless trauma. And she deserves space, privacy, and time with her loved ones to recover and heal from her time being wrongfully detained. Brittany is an incomparable athlete, a two-time Olympic gold medalist for Team USA. She endured mistreatment and a show trial in Russia with characteristic grit and incredible dignity. She represents the best America, the best about America. It is across the board, everything about her. She wrote to me back in July. She didn't ask for special treatment, even though we've been working on a release from day one. She requested a simple quote, "Please don't forget about me and the other American detainees. Please do all you can to bring us home." We never forgot about Brittany. We've not forgotten about Paul Whelan, who's been unjustly detained in Russia for years. This was not a choice of which American to bring home. We brought home Trevor Reed when we had a chance early this year. Sadly, for totally illegitimate reasons, Russia is treating Paul's case differently than Brittany's.
It's really sad.
And while we have not yet succeeded in securing Paul's release, we are not giving up. We will never give up. We remain in close touch with Paul's family, the Whelan family, and my thoughts and prayers are with them today. They have to have such mixed emotions today.
You think?
And we'll keep negotiating in good faith for Paul's release. I guarantee that. I say that to the family. I guarantee you.
Good.
And I urge Russia to do the same to ensure that Paul's health and humane treatment maintained until we are able to bring him home. I don't want any American to sit wrongfully detained and one extra day if we can bring that person home. My administration has now brought home dozens of Americans who were wrongfully detained or held hostage abroad, many of whom had been held since before I took office. And today, we also remember the other Americans that are being held hostage and wrongfully detained in Russia or anywhere else in the world. Reuniting these Americans with their loved ones remains a priority for my administration, every person in my administration involved in this. We're going to continue to work to bring home every American who continues to endure such an injustice. We also want to prevent any more.
I want
American
you to hear the part. So Biden is actually doing very well, obviously. He had good news to share. But Brittany Griner's wife steps up to the microphone and says a few words. And she was awesome. So I want to play through to that.
Includes warnings about the risk of being wrongfully detained by a foreign government. Make no mistake about it. This work is not easy. Negotiations are always difficult. There are never any guarantees.
That's true.
But it's my job as President of the United States to make the hard calls and protect American citizens everywhere in the world. Anywhere in the world.
Anywhere
in
the world.
And I'm proud that today we have made one more family whole again. So welcome home, Brittany.
Yes.
And now I'd like to invite Sherelle to say a few words to you.
Sherelle.
Of course, Sherelle she's not Griner. Excited at all about this. Sherelle, it's all yours.
Too bad I'm not running the video of this because she had the biggest smile on her face, and it was pretty awesome.
So over the last 9 months, you all have been so privy to one of the darkest moments of my life. And so today I'm just standing here overwhelmed with emotions. But the most important emotion that I have right now is just sincere gratitude for President Biden and his entire administration. He just mentioned this work is not easy, and it has not been. There's been so many hands involved. And so I'd like to take a moment to just specifically mention a few. Vice President Harris, Secretary Blinken, Jake Sullivan, Josh Geltzer from the National Security Council, Roger Cartson and Fletcher Schoen from the Hostage Envoy's Office. A special thank you to Governor Richardson and Mickey, the Mercury Players, the WNB, PA for your advocacy. And also, you guys may not know this, but my family has been tremendously supported by the Wasserman agency. BG's agent, Lindsay Colas, has just been amazing for me and my family throughout this process. So today my family is whole, but as you all are aware, there's so many other families who are not whole. And so BG's not here to say this, but I will gladly speak on her behalf and say that BG and I will remain committed to the work of getting every American home, including Paul, whose family is in our hearts today as we celebrate BG being home. We do understand that there are still people out here who are enduring what I endured the last 9 months of missing tremendously their loved ones. So thank you everybody for your support. And today it's just a happy day for me and my family.
And
so
that's where she broke into a giant smile.
Right.
She did smile.
Thank
big
you.
Time. Thank you. It's so great. I mean, that feels really good. Keep that good feeling because I'm going to show you something that's going to piss you off. I know I'm always the party pooper, aren't I? So there was a camera there. When, I guess, at an airport in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, they, on the tarmac, the plane carrying Brittany Griner arrived from Russia, and the plane carrying Victor Boot arrived from the United States. And I'm going to show you the video where they pass each other. One thing to notice, Brittany Griner, you'll be able to recognize, if you're watching the video, if you're listening to the audio stream, I'm sorry, I'll explain to you what's happening. You see Brittany Griner all the way on the left. You can't miss her because she's the tall one. But you'll also notice something that's missing. Her signature dreadlocks are gone. Her hair is short. It looks like a man's haircut. And that's tragic because the Russian, fuck them, the Russians. Let me just say that. Fuck them. And now, you know, the death merchant, the weapons dealer from Russia is walking towards the camera. Brittany Griner is greeted by some sheikh or something wearing a long, whatever it is they wear, you know, their official uniform. I don't know. But you know what? I'm sure if the cost to her for coming home was that they cut off her dreadlocks, I'm sure she'll deal with it. But I know that's, you know, you don't do that. You just don't do that. So, yes, I am very happy for her. I am just very, very happy for her. I'm happy for her family. I'm happy for, you know, and I feel for the Whelan family. And I believe the president when he says that he will work. He promises he won't let up. until it begins. And the right-wingers are all apoplectic about this. Don, the idiot junior, tweeted something like, oh, so they free the WNBA person who hates America. You know what? Trumpers, fuck off. Here, for Donald Trump Jr. and the rest of the maggots, this is for you.
I just need you to shut the fuck up, cause nobody asked you, bitch. I need you to shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Just shut the fuck up, bitch. Shut the fuck up, bitch. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow, shut the fuck up. Shut the fuck up. Bow, bow.
Okay, enough of that. So I got to tell you something else that I'm going to pat myself on the back over because I got this right. Actually, I published a blog post for the first time, I think it was 8 years ago. In fact, let me pull it up. I think it was April 29th of 2014. The post on my website read, Travel Advisory. The United States is not safe. And what I said back then, oh, I'm sorry, this was a repost. I originally wrote it and posted it on September 18th, 2013. I reposted it in 2014. I reposted it in 2018 and 2019 and other times in the past. And let me read to you what I wrote. The gist of it, I won't read the whole thing. But I wrote, I've come to the realization that nothing will be done to stop the madness. The mass killings by crazed gunmen with weapons that serve no purpose other than to kill will continue unabashed. After all, we've already witnessed the unthinkable. A congresswoman meeting with constituents outside of a grocery store shot in the head. She was lucky enough to survive, but six people who went there to meet her were not. 20 six- and seven-year-old children slaughtered in their classroom, along with six adults who did everything possible to protect the children in their charge. And then I wrote, and on Monday, the crazy man with the guns killed 12 people. But they were just your everyday, run-of-the-mill, normal folk who ranged in age from 46 to 73. No, they weren't babies. And no, they weren't high-ranking elected officials. If our representatives in Washington weren't moved by 20 babies' bullet-ridden bodies, or by one of their own ambushed, they certainly won't be motivated by the loss of another dozen or so mere citizens whose job it is to protect. Obviously, the only thing that seems to matter to these politicians, who are either against any sensible gun regulations, are afraid to cast the vote they know is needed, or simply haven't read the entire Second Amendment to the Constitution, a well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed, is money. So I say that we take it to their pocketbooks. Although the murder of an Australian baseball player and college student, Christopher Lane, last month in Oklahoma by, quote, three bored teenagers, isn't on the map of mass killings above because only one person was killed. But it was enough to prompt Australia's Deputy Prime Minister, Tim Fisher, to warn, quote, it is another example of murder mayhem on Main Street. People thinking of going to the USA for business or tourist trips should think carefully about it, given the statistical fact that you are 15 times more likely to be shot dead in the USA than in Australia per capita. And I went on, but my point in this missive that I've republished a number of times over the past 9 years is that other nations should do like Tim Fisher, the former deputy prime minister of Australia, did, and warn his people that the United States is not safe and they should issue a travel advisory. And maybe if it hits us in the tourism pocketbook here in the U.S., maybe then they do something, because obviously the almighty dollar is the only thing that makes most of our Congress move. Well, let me share this with you. It only took 9 years, but from CNN, listen to this. for some perspective on just how far the U.S. has drifted from the rest of the world with its approach to gun violence, consider this list of travel warnings that other nations give their citizens about U.S. violence. This list, compiled by the CNN travel team, is an eye-opening, disturbing glimpse at what gun violence has done to our standing on the world stage. Australia. The Australian government warns its citizens who plan to visit the U.S. that, quote, violent crime is more common than in Australia, and gun crime is possible in all areas. Follow guidance and instructions. If you live in the U.S., learn active shooter drills. Okay. Canada. The Canadian government makes its warning about mass shootings explicit. Quote, incidences of mass shootings occur, resulting most often in casualties. Although tourists are rarely involved, there is a risk of being in the wrong place at the wrong time. Next, we move to the UK. The United Kingdom reminds would-be visitors to America that, quote, incidents of mass shootings can occur, but account for a very small percentage of homicide deaths. Okay, there's a little qualifier there. It also tells its citizens that, quote, violent crime, including gun crime, rarely involves tourists, but you should take care when traveling in unfamiliar areas and walking through less traveled areas alone, especially at night. Germany is in on it, too. The German Ministry of Foreign Affairs tells its citizens, quote, that it's easy to obtain guns in the United States, leading to increased uses of guns and occasional killing sprees. The number of arms and ammunition purchases has increased significantly during COVID-19 times. But wait, there's more. Japan! The Japanese government warns its citizens, quote, one of the main security concerns in the United States is gun crime, and offers a lot of advice for getting out of or hunkering down in possible active shooter situations, including find security exits in a new place and have an evacuation plan, escape regardless of whether others agree or not, hide in a room and barricade the door using heavy furniture, keep quiet and mute cell phones. If a Japanese tourist can't escape or hide, they're advised to, quote, throw things close to the criminal, use them as weapons, scream, act with all your might. This is an official advisory from the Japanese government to its citizens who may be traveling to the United States. And there's another one, New Zealand. The country's safe travel website goes on to warn its citizens that, quote, there's a higher incidence of violent crime and firearm possession than in New Zealand. In many states, it's legal for United States citizens to openly carry firearms in public. However, crime rates vary considerably across cities and suburbs, and incidents rarely involve tourists. Oh, give me a break. I love the way they're bending over backwards to try to appease, obviously, the U.S. government. But the fact remains that they're issuing these travel warnings because they have to. To the rest of the world, I say it, don't come here. There's so many places, it's a big world. So many other places where you can spend your tourist dollars and not risk getting killed just because you happen to, walk down a street in any town, USA. And yes, hurt this country economically by depriving us of your tourist dollars and make it clear that that's why you're doing it. And then maybe, just maybe, we can get some kind of a reasonable gun laws, an assault weapons ban. Let's start with that. All right. So a couple of things. I heard from our friends, the Marsh family. For those regular listeners, you know the Marsh family. They live in Kent, I think Faversham, if that's right, in the UK. And they started, they're a very musical family. All the kids play, they all play instruments and they all sing beautifully. And during the during the pandemic, they were putting out song after song after song, many of them pandemic related. Well, since, you know, the kids went back to school, they've gotten a little more political, singing parody songs dealing with the crazy political situation over there and some over here. Well, the Marsh family has now, well, they released the official music video today and their official single drops tomorrow. And I want to play it for you and tell you a little bit about it. And, oh, by the way, sometime later in the month after the kids are out of school, the Marsh family is going to come back for another visit. We last spoke to them last year, and I love checking in with them periodically and seeing how the kids are growing. I'm such an old fart. Anyway, this song that they are releasing officially tomorrow is called In the Bleak. And it's all to benefit the Save the Children Foundation, the original, the real one, not the maggot, perversion of it, but Save the Children, whose work helps keep children safe, healthy, and learning in the UK and around the world. So they don't have a music label, they don't have a publisher, but they wrote this song and released the video. It premiered today on YouTube. The song will be officially released tomorrow. I will post all the information about ordering it and the link to the video, which I'll actually put the link to the video in the YouTube chat right now. I'll put all the information where I post today's show so you can order the single if you want. Again, it all goes to a great cause. I encourage you to listen carefully to the lyrics, and thankfully they do print them. You know, they put them on the screen during the song. But this is an original song from the Marsh family, and it's called In the Bleak. Hold on. I gotta stop the sound from doubling. All right. Oh, okay. Hold on. We're coming back. I got to get the right screen up again. Sorry about that. Okay, now, take two. Here we go. It's called In the Bleak.
To
Really beautiful, right? The Marsh Family. It's called In the Bleak, and it's an original song that they wrote, recorded. They just premiered the video today on YouTube. All the proceeds will go to Save the Children. The official video is released tomorrow, and then they will join us live once again, the Marsh Family, for their third appearance on the show, sometime probably the week of December 19th, once the kids are out of school. But I had a nice email discussion with Danielle over the last couple of days, and they're going to come back on the show. Good on them. I feel proud of them. I just love that family. Okay, well, you know what time it is, don't you?
Are you a multinational corporation hungry for a treat? Well, come on down to Schmucky Chucky's, where you'll personally be seated by Chuck Schumer himself.
So many dishes, and they're all fresh.
You're gonna love our Blue Dog special, the Dino Burger, because we say so.
A good hamburger and French fries.
And every burger comes with a side order of...
grits. I love grits. I love anything with corn. It's corn.
All for only $50,000. Wash it all down with a Dirty Debbie.
9/10 water, 1/10 orange juice. After a week or two, you drink this, it's 200 calories and it's acetic.
And wipe your mouth with a tissue print of Glass-Steagall. For dessert, try our DNC tarts.
Little cookies, tell the quality of that.
Most restaurants give you a mint, but at Schmucky Chucky's, you get complimentary.
Sweet and low.
Who picks up the tab for all this? Find out now with Howie Klein of DownWithTierney.com on the Nicole Sandler Show.
Ah, hello, Howie Klein.
Hi, Nicole.
So, well, I'm sorry, what?
Are you well?
I'm doing well, and I'm thrilled that the 2022 midterm elections are finally over.
Yes, they are.
They are. And we went out, you know, went out with a... I would say bang, although we got to find a different word with a victory. I don't like gun analogies or metaphors because we've got too much gun stuff going on in this country. So went out with a huge victory. Although I got to say the fact that that race in Georgia was even close is embarrassing.
Yeah, but you know, what do you expect?
Well, I you know, I kind of expect better than that. But anyway, you know, Howie, before we get move on, I wanted to share with you something that I just shared with the listeners a little while ago. I'm sure I said this to you over the years. You know how I was sort of lobbying for other countries to issue travel advisories about coming to the U.S. because it's not safe here?
Yeah.
Well, many of them now have. CNN actually did a thing on their website, I guess it was last week, and they showed that a whole lot of countries now are doing it. Australia, Canada, the UK, Germany, Japan, and New Zealand have all issued travel advisories warning their citizens when traveling to the United States that they could come upon a mass shooting, that they could be subject to people with guns and open carry. They're finally doing it. I don't think it's as strong a warning as it could be, but it's a step in the right direction.
Amazing.
It really is. It really is. So, you sound very low key today.
No, I'm gonna. If I sounded low key, it was because I was just like putting the finishing touches on a post I was writing, and now walking away from my computer so I won't be distracted.
Okay.
I was just literally just putting up a picture of Adam Schiff and Katie Porter.
Okay. Well, okay. Is there a reason?
Yes, and it's probably not the reason that you think it is.
Okay.
So what's the reason you think it is?
One of them should be named to replace Dianne Feinstein.
Did Dianne die today?
No, but, you know, it's a matter of time, isn't it?
Well, the reason that most people would think that I just said that to you is because they're probably the two front runners to run in 2024 for Dianne Feinstein's seat if she lasts that long.
Yes. Okay.
So, but that's not the reason I put it up. The reason I put it up is because they were among the 35, I believe, Democrats. Was it 30? No, no, or 45. I think 45 Democrats voted. Yes, 45 Democrats voted against the defense budget today.
Oh, did
and,
they?
And those were two of the ones who voted against it. So you would think, well, yeah, of course, Katie Porter, you know, makes sense.
Right.
She's, you know, very progressive. But why did Adam Schiff vote against it? And I don't know the answer to that. And I did write to Adam, and I don't know that he'll respond.
I may know. I may have the answer. And I came upon it this morning with a disturbing thread, a post that I saw from Jane Mayer, who writes for The Atlantic, The New Yorker. The New Yorker. And I usually really trust her. And what she wrote was, lawmakers have just added a provision to the National Defense Authorization Act protecting Supreme Court spouses from having to reveal any outside employer in the name of security. If it passes, Ginny Thomas's professional entanglements would effectively be state secrets. And so I retweeted that with a what the fuck? And then somebody else responded to me and said, well, it's not true, at least not the way she writes it. And then she said, check out Lawrence Tribe's Twitter response to this. So Lawrence Tribe said, no, it's not true. I helped write the provision. So there's a lot of confusion about this provision. I'm wondering why there's any protection for Supreme Court justices. And I posed that question and Jane Mayer responded to me. And she said, well, it is about, it's about security. And I get the need for security. But I don't understand the reasoning for the Supreme Court being above all the ethics clauses that every other member of the judiciary has to work under. So I'm wondering if it has something to do with that.
No.
No. Okay.
I mean, I don't think so. I mean, who knows? Maybe Adam will say exactly that.
Uh-huh.
But I doubt it. I think that the reason that he voted no is because he has been undergoing a very rapid sea change in the way he looks at policy
uh-huh.
and politics in general. When he entered Congress and immediately joined the Blue Dogs, since then he left the Blue Dogs and went into the New Dems. There are no other New Dems who voted the way he did today. And instead, he voted to the left of many progressives. And when I looked at his record, just to give myself a checkup, his record for the 117th Congress was to the left of AOC.
Whoa. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I mean, he really has changed, and to the left of Jamal Bowman and to the left of Ted Lieu. And he, according to Progressive Punch, in any case.
Wow.
So it, maybe it's just because that's where his head is right now, or maybe it's because he's thinking about what's going to happen, in this race, probably against Katie for the U.S. Senate seat,
right?
But I don't know. I wrote him a note, and we'll see if he responds.
Right. Okay. Well, we'll see. By the way, Jane Mayer's response to me was, "It's about safety for judges." As we've all seen, the threats to their security have grown horrifically. At the same time, we've also seen the ethics issues proliferating. So, I don't know. That to me raised a big red flag. But they're always trying to, attach things to the NDAA that have nothing to do with the NDAA, like that.
Right. It's not just the NDAA.
It's everything.
It's any must-pass bill,
right.
And that's a must-pass bill. It has to pass, and it always does. And so they add things to it. So, you know, the provision that you're talking about, if you know, first of all, I don't know exactly what that provision is, just that it's not what Jane Mayer said, but I don't know what it actually is. And if they just added it to it, they added it to it. What can I say? I don't even know what it is.
Right. They do that with all kinds of things. And there was something else that was attached to it that they pulled off. You know, they're attaching all kinds of stuff.
Thing that they pulled off, if you're talking about the same thing I'm thinking about, was Joe Manchin's anti-climate change bullshit. So that, you know, they had Pelosi Schumer had promised him that they and Biden had promised him that they would try, and they put it in, and they found out that it wouldn't fly. The Progressive Caucus said, "We will not vote for the NDAA, and we'll tank it."
Right.
I doubt they could have tanked it, but they did put that out, and at that point they pulled Manchin's thing out of it.
Yes. So I didn't see that they had even a vote on it today. I did notice
there was no vote on that.
There was a vote
on the overall NDAA.
Gotcha.
But the decision to pull it off, pull it out of there, would be Schumer and Pelosi together would make that decision.
Right. That they don't take a vote on. That what goes into the final bill, they determine and then they put it on the floor. So I guess it wasn't in there. All right. There's another must pass bill. And it's not necessarily the bill, but they've got to fund the government because funding runs out in like another 8 days. So they got
to
get.
You know, they always wait to the last day.
Always, always.
To make it as dramatic as they can.
Of course, and you know, I love it when they're forced to stay in D.C. through Christmas and up to New Year because they've got to work. You know, because they can't get their shit together to vote.
Well, that's not going to happen.
I know they'll work. They'll figure out a way to get home by Christmas Eve, probably before.
Oh yes,
probably before.
Because you know how important that is.
Oh, yeah, for whatever. Yeah. So I'm looking at downwithtyranny.com as I do. And I see that you have you're also weighing in on the dilemma, the House leadership dilemma in the Republican Party. Poor Kevin McCarthy just wants to be Speaker so badly, but there's a faction within his party that does not want him, and they don't have many votes to spare. And it's looking like right now there's a standoff. Do you know what the latest is?
The latest, which happened just a few minutes ago, was that he had a meeting with the ringleader of this tiny faction that says under no circumstances will they vote for him. And the leader of that is Matt Gaetz. And so reporters questioned Gaetz as he was leaving McCarthy's office, and Gaetz said, "I'm still not voting for him."
Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
So all
he can afford is to lose three. If he loses four, he's gone. And there are four who said no. Now, my theory about this is that they're not really going to not let him be Speaker, that they will let him be Speaker, but they're going to force him to agree to this vacate the chair rule, which will allow them to get rid of him at will. So in other words, he has given the thumbs down to that rule. They voted on it in the Republican conference and they decided to not do it. But I think these four will make him change his mind. That's what I think.
Okay.
That this is what this is all about.
Or
because
you floated,
there is no other answer to this.
Right.
What are they just going to do? Keep voting and voting and voting to the rest of their lives? Because there are, I think the last count was 150 Republicans who have pledged that they would not vote for anyone else but McCarthy.
Oh, God. Okay.
And then there are these four or five who say they will never vote for McCarthy. So the alternative would be to make a deal with Josh Gottheimer.
Right, which you floated.
Yep.
You said that. But do you think he would do that? I mean, he's shown himself.
All he would have to do is get a bunch of conservative Democrats to just vote present.
Oh.
And that would allow McCarthy, because that would let McCarthy win the thing.
Oh, really? Because they don't. I thought he needed 218 votes to win. It's just the majority
of people voting.
I see. Oh, that's interesting. That's different.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't have to vote for him.
The thing is that a number of Republicans beyond just the ones who hate, who have said that they will never vote for McCarthy, others have said if he's not going to get this on it with a deal with the Democrats, that they will not vote for him. They said any kind of deal with the Democrats will mean they will not vote for McCarthy.
Oh, wow. Yeah. All right. And when is this supposed to happen? Do they have until like January 3rd or do they have to get it done now?
No. He's working at it every day. But it's January 3rd is the vote. Chances are, they'll have more than one vote. It'll go on, maybe even more than one day. But in the end, he'll cave and he'll give them what they want, which is this vacate the chair rule. That's what he wants. Because with that, they can get rid of him as easily as they got rid of Boehner and Ryan.
Oh, yeah. And they're gone. Boehner, interestingly enough, is like a big investor in some cannabis company, I think. And I don't know what Paul Ryan's doing, his best Eddie Munster imitation.
Ryan
I guess.
has a lot of also big jobs, and he's getting very rich. But he is also advising McCarthy and telling McCarthy, if you give in to this vacate the chair rule, they will use it against you every single time something comes up that they get angry about. And you'll be speaker in name, but it'll be the nightmare of your life. So Ryan is just telling him and trying to get him, this spineless jellyfish to have a spine and not give in. But I think he will give in. I think in the end he's going to give in and he'll be so-called speaker.
Right.
With this sort of Damocles, hanging over his head for however long he's in there.
Right, because that's all he's wanted. And he had to sit through, Paul Ryan. Remember the whole young guns thing? They're not so young anymore, and most of them are now gone. But he's like the last young gun standing, and he's like, I want to be speaker!
So, yep. And they prevented him from being speaker last time, and I just think he'll do anything he has to do to get them to agree. Now, on the other hand, I could be wrong, because maybe Gates and Rosendale and, the other crackpots, Bob Good, maybe they're telling the truth and nothing will make them vote for him, but I don't believe them.
Matt Gates, let's talk about this guy for a moment. Sorry to do this, but his friend...
Florida.
His friend was sentenced to like 14 years in prison, and this is after he supposedly cooperated to get his sentence reduced. And he cooperated on Matt Gaetz, I guess, among other things. Why is Matt Gaetz still not charged with anything?
Because from what I heard, it's because that guy who they put in jail, I can't remember his name, the tax collector, is so such a bad witness that they feel that they could never convict Gaetz. So they would put Gaetz up there, and then they would fail. So they decided not to charge him so far.
So he remains in Congress with his fucked up attitude because he thinks his shit doesn't stink.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. He might be with especially with Louie Gohmert leaving, Matt Gaetz might be the most annoying member of Congress. Well, there's Jim Jordan too, but Matt Gaetz.
There is Jim Jordan, but are you just purposely skipping over Marge and Lauren Boebert?
No, and there's the Marge and the Boebert. Sorry, it's hard to do this. There's so many of them. Oh, God. Oh, my goodness. Marjorie Taylor Greene, she is something. I'm trying to think of the right word. Something. I don't know what. It's the kind of thing you want to scrape off your shoe, but she is that.
And she is now allied with Kevin McCarthy.
Yes, so she'll be like the shadow speaker.
That's right. She's going to be like assistant speaker or something like that. It's so fantastic.
Oh my God! It's the dystopian novel that can't get published because it's too outlandish in real life. We thought Trump being elected was the epitome of that, but it just keeps going. It's the story that never ends.
Imagine Trump being reelected.
Oh, no.
No, that's not going to happen. I'm sure of it. But you know what? I was sure he wasn't going to be elected in 2016.
I know. But the thing is, his touch seems to have faded. And I think maybe his refusal to condemn you know, Kanye West after he says, well, I respect Hitler. I love everybody. Hitler was good. And Donald Trump still won't denounce that. I think it's finally, we hear some Republicans, not all of them, but some of them are starting to say that's enough. In fact, on one of the TV shows today, I was flipping through the channels, Mick Mulvaney, he was Donald Trump's chief of staff, and he's now one of the people saying, oh, he can't win. He's, you know, he's done. Really?
Well, yeah, well, I think he is too. But remember, the elites don't have a lot to do with the base. And there's got to be something that's going to turn the base against him, and they're trying everything they can to do that. But it hasn't worked yet. He's still, you know, he's still up there and would probably win the nomination and then lose the general.
Right. Yes. Well, that would be fine. And I don't, you know, and right now I feel a lot stronger than I did even a year ago that he would lose the general. I think the American people, for the most part, are over him except for the Nazis. And you know what? He can have the Nazis.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think there are enough of them to elect a president. Did you see this news item? The Washington Post is reporting that Democrats on the Senate Finance Committee and the House Oversight Committee finally this week sent letters to the state and defense departments seeking information about Jared Kushner's deal to bail him out of that building at 666 Fifth Avenue for $1.2 billion.
I did.
And I mean, now I guess I'm glad that the Senate Finance Committee is in on it because they can keep it going. But the House Oversight Committee, they got 2 weeks left.
Yep. If that.
If that. You know, somebody asked me the other day, so, and I know the answer, and I know you do, but let's just say it anyway. Somebody asked me, so what happens with all the bills that have been introduced that haven't gone anywhere when it ends? Can they just pick it up in the next term? And the answer is no, because this will be the end of the 117th Congress. The 118th Congress gets sworn in on January 3rd, and everything starts from scratch. So all those bills, remember how excited I was when we saw there was antitrust legislation that was being taken up? Well, it was introduced. It wasn't taken up. And now it's dead, right? After the next few weeks.
Maybe. In other words, it can be reintroduced.
Right.
And remember, this is... there are a lot of Republicans who feel strongly about antitrust also, believe it or not.
Oh, okay. Well, hopefully they will get something done on that end because it's just one of the many problems plaguing us right now.
Yep.
Yep.
And if the Republicans are smart, they'll you know, get behind a bill, their own version of it, and pass it and say, look, the Democrats couldn't do this and we did it.
Yeah. Yeah. If they were smart, that's the qualifier there. We'll see. You know, they're not, but
you know. There are also a lot of Republicans, obviously, who oppose it.
Of course.
So it would be in other words, this is something that can only pass with a coalition of a very kind of out there Republicans and plus most Democrats.
Yeah.
So I don't know that they're going to get it done, but it's not impossible to get done. You know, there are people like, for example, in the Senate, the Republicans in the Senate, some of the real bad guys would be behind this, like what's his name, Hawley.
Hawley.
He's definitely behind it.
Right.
He'd be for it, and in a big way. And more than just voting for it, he would wind up being a co-writer and sponsor.
Right. Well, by the same,
so they can make some headway with this particular policy. This is one of the few where they could.
Right. But the bill will have to be reintroduced with a new number. Yeah. And everything for the 118th Congress.
Not just reintroduced, but rewritten as well, which isn't the end of the world, but it would definitely have to have a little bit more appeal to Republicans. You know, the bill leans a little bit towards Democrats now. It would have to lean a little bit towards Republicans. But, you know, that's what happens when you lose an election.
That's right.
Although Alan Grayson reminded me today that on average, six congressman per year or per
term,
per session.
Per session. Die?
Yeah, term. That's right. Well, not necessarily die,
but
they leave.
Right.
You know, they could get another job
right.
also, or they could die, or they could get sick. Or,
one one of the Democrats.
There are other things that happen aside from death.
Right. One of the Democrats who was elected already died. There, so the Democrats are down one because one guy died from Virginia.
Who?
I'll find his name if you want. It was a name I didn't know. I think I had it in my news yesterday. Let me see if I can find it. But yeah, that happens. So with so,
someone who got reelected?
I don't know if it was a new a new one or a reelected one. I will tell you. His name was
want to know.
Donald McEachin. Of Virginia.
Oh, he's an old one. He's been there for a long time.
Okay.
But and it's an extremely blue district. There's no chance any Republican can win. It's basically the population is in Richmond, Virginia. Yeah, McEachin died of cancer a week or two ago.
Right.
And he'll be replaced without a problem in a special election. The only problem is that the special election has to be called by the Republican governor who's dragging his feet.
Of course. Right. So the Dems are down one in an already in a very tight margin, but that gives the Republicans a little, you know, one more in terms of breathing room. And
right,
so
but remember, you know, we're about to go into a COVID spike in a big way.
That's right.
And all the Democrats are vaccinated and boosted.
And the Republicans
and there are a number
are
of Republicans who aren't.
That's right.
So the chances of you know, three or four of them dying is better. Let's start with Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is always talking about how the fact that she's never gotten a vaccine.
Right. Yeah, good. Go out without a mask and go be among the people, Marge. You go
yep.
mingle. Go mingle and breathe hard. yeah, and I don't know where I read it, but I did read something that since the vaccines have come out, I should have saved the numbers. Republicans are dying at a much higher rate of COVID than Democrats are.
Absolutely.
Yep.
And you know, all of the members of Congress who have died of COVID have been Republicans as well.
Have met. I guess some, yeah, have died. I mean, when you think back and look at 999, Herman Cain, he wasn't in Congress, but he died of COVID. You know, I guess there have been quite a few Republicans died of COVID, and they still keep saying, oh, it's a hoax. It, you know, that whole thing, they was just forced on us.
One of the things that McCarthy made a big deal over was to get rid of the mandatory vaccines
yes.
for the military. So to him, this is the biggest victory he's ever had in his life, but really he didn't have much pushback. I mean, no one cared at this point. But you know, that was something that they're spinning as a huge Republican win.
Yeah.
And I noticed that the Washington Post, you know, took the spin and ran with it and made a big headline about it.
As it was a good thing?
Well, it's a good thing for the Republicans, and the Washington Post said they had their first big victory.
Oh, God.
And the thing is, it wasn't really a big victory because there was no one really pushing back against it. No one cared. I mean, when it happened, it was at the height of the pandemic. Now, you know, it doesn't need to be there now.
Well, but it should be there. Look, kids, when they go to school, to enroll your child in school, you've got to show their vaccination card. You've got to show that they've got all that childhood vaccinations. COVID should be included with those. I don't know why there's an exception. And because of this push to vilify the COVID vaccine, people are also not getting their kids immunized. And that's why polio is coming back. That's why measles is coming back. You know, we're getting these infectious diseases that we'd pretty much eradicated are now coming back with a vengeance because idiots are not vaccinating their kids or themselves.
Imagine the Florida panhandle depopulated.
Well, there's always that silver lining. I hear they have pretty beaches up there, but I wouldn't go because, you know, Florida. Hey, I noted. Oh, it's already 6 o'clock. Oh my God, this flew by. We've just been talking. All right, before I let you go, Howie, I noticed you put up a piece at Down with Tyranny about what happened in Germany, where their own sort of January 6th was thwarted because the authorities paid attention and they had a pre-dawn raid of these people, including Prince
Heinrich the
13th. Oh, the 13th. I was thinking it was the 8th. That's right. X11 is 13. Heinrich the 13th, the 71-year-old prince of what? Ruth? Where's okay? And he's like the head maggot over there.
Right. I mean, it was a very, very incoherent group of people because some of them, like him, were monarchists and others were flat out Nazis. But yet they were all against the government. So they sort of got together, even though their interests aren't exactly the same. But they were going to kill they were going to come into the parliament armed and kill members of parliament, including the chancellor. And supposedly Heinrich the 13th was going to become the regent for whatever monarchy emerged.
Wow. But they headed it off. Nothing happened because they raided like 30 locations at the same time at like 6 o'clock in the morning all over. And not only all in Germany. And they arrested 25 people. Apparently they're looking for 27 more. One was arrested in Austria.
One of the
in
persons
Italy.
Who they arrested, by the way, was a Russian. And supposedly the Russian government was aiding and abetting this thing.
Well, that's not surprising. And then the Brittany Griner thing, you know, I'm glad she's out. But I looked at the video of the exchange on the tarmac in the UAE, and I feel bad. They cut off all her hair. And, you know, dreadlocks are a thing to people who have them. That's like, you don't fuck with it. And they did. They cut it all off, which it's just everything about that is just so wrong. You know, I have a friend in Ukraine, a woman who I met when I called over there shortly after the war started. She owns a hostel in Kyiv, and we talk over the Telegram app. And so we had a great, you know, I hadn't spoken to her in a little while, but I'm concerned because of the reports that Putin is dropping these like white phosphorus bombs or something. He's trying to knock out all the power so there's no heat, there's no electricity in the middle of winter. And she sent me a video of how she's cooking. You're not on video, so I'll just explain it. They have a pot with a bunch of like candles, like votive candles on the bottom. And then she puts another pot on top of it and puts a cover on it. And that's how they are cooking. And she said, hello, my, because I asked, how are you doing? She said, hello, my friend, everything is fine. We keep our thoughts in order. After the shelling, the light disappeared for 3 days. And with it, both water and heating left. Then for a week, the light was 1.5 hours a day. Today, the light was not turned off at all, but I know that the situation in Kyiv is completely different. We are strong and it won't break us. You can't even imagine what inventions we have come up with in these months. And I, you know, I'm like, I'm in such awe of her attitude even. And she said, we've learned to live with such difficulties. The main thing is to have time to cook food, wash your hair and dry it, because sometimes all these things take an hour and 30 minutes. You need to properly allocate time. And I'm glad to hear. I said, the reports we're getting here are quite dismal. We're worried you'll all freeze and starve. She said, right now there is, but when there is no light, there is no heating in the house. Sometimes the temperature drops to 14 degrees Celsius, which is about 55, 56, 57 degrees in there somewhere. And she said, so we bought a generator, and now friends are sending a large battery from Latvia so that even without electricity, our house will always be warm. I assure you, she said, cold, hunger, and darkness are just the price of independence. And everyone who stayed in Ukraine is ready to be patient.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm in such awe of these people for just digging in. And she said, the last thing she said, I have so much respect for you all going through this. What Putin's doing is sickening. And her last response was, I understand well what you say. My life goes on. Perhaps I even became stronger and more patient thanks to the tyrant who does not understand how he united our country, citizens, and bright souls all over the planet.
Wow.
Yeah, that's all you can say is wow. And they're right there in Kyiv and dealing with this on a daily basis, and it just blows my mind. So
I mean, it's 60 degrees in L.A., and I'm freezing.
Yeah, can you imagine it being 60 degrees inside your house? Because when it gets that cold inside, it's chilling. Yeah. So you're like David. David can't, if it gets below like 70, he's miserable. That's why we're moving to Arizona. It's got to be somewhere else, you know, ridiculously hot. All right, Howie Klein. I guess we're done for today. Anything else that you want to get out there?
Well, too long. I was going to talk a little bit about the gay marriage bill.
Oh, you know what? But we should, because they passed it. But it's kind of it basically says, well, there are some protections, but not really. I mean, I wish I could remember who wrote it. Somebody wrote a great piece about that. It just doesn't go far enough. And why are we celebrating this when it's still the Supreme Court can still say that they overturn Obergefell. And, even if you live in a state that will not recognize gay marriage, if you leave, go to another state that does and get remarried there, you can come back. I guess it's better than nothing, but it's not good enough, is it?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not certain. I didn't read the actual bill, so I don't know what it says. I was more interested in who voted for it and who voted against it.
Well, and fewer Republicans voted for it this time than did the last time, right?
Exactly. And who were they? They were, generally speaking, Republicans like Maria Elvira Salazar in Miami.
Yes.
So she voted for it the first time because she was going to soon after in July, because she was getting ready for an election against Annette Tadeo, where Tadeo would make that into an issue.
That's right.
So to diffuse that as an issue, she voted for the bill. Then the bill comes back a little bit more Republican friendly, and she votes against it anyway.
Right. And so
and
did Mario.
Why did she do that? You know, she figured, you know, 2 years from now, the voters will never remember.
Of course. And so did Mario Diaz-Balart, by the way, another Republican from down here. By the way, brother of Jose Diaz-Balart, who's on MSNBC every day, in case anyone wants
and
to.
And the brother of
Lincoln. Lincoln,
who's going to be the president of Cuba.
Really?
Oh, yeah. That's why he was in Congress, too.
I know.
And he retired from Congress, and he's just working on becoming the president of Cuba.
Wow, that's interesting. It's the first time I'd heard that. I know he left Congress some 8 or 10 years ago, but I didn't know that was why. Because their mother, was it their mother or their aunt, was married to Castro, wasn't she? They are related to the Castro family.
Yes, and the father was the head of the Interior Department, and not only the I don't remember, you know, what their Interior Department is, but that's, you know, that's what he did. And he not only did that department torture people, but he personally tortured people.
Wow. 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 When you dig, you come up with all kinds of dirt. there's a lot there for the digging. All right. With that, Howie, I will let you go. We'll talk next week.
Good. Talk to you next week. Have a good week.
You too. Thanks so much. Howie Klein. Again, find him at downwithtyranny.com. And of course, when you're there, well, right now we're between, but pretty soon I'm sure they will get the Blue America page set up for the 2024 elections. Because in this country, we start the election cycle ridiculously early, and we let it go on interminably, seemingly. And that's enough. All right. With that, we are done for a Thursday. Tomorrow's Friday. And let me tell you what we've got going on tomorrow. Lisa Graves will be here. Lisa Graves, friend of the show. You've heard her. We all love her. She was a former deputy assistant attorney general under both Janet Reno and John Ashcroft. And, oh, God, the guy who came after Ashcroft, too, I believe. Under both Clinton and Bush, W. And she's gonna weigh in on a few things. The two Supreme Court, the two cases the Extreme Court heard this week. One dealing with, you know, a business's right to discriminate against a gay couple. You know, I'm not going to serve you because I don't like who you sleep with. And the other that they just heard yesterday on election, you know, turning over the election process, everything having to do with it, to the local, to the state government, with the courts not even being able to weigh in. So I had other shit going on this week. I didn't get to pay as much attention. I didn't listen. So I reached out to Lisa, and yes, so Lisa, no, Janet Reno's not still alive. Lisa will join us tomorrow to weigh in on those. Plus, she said, and the January 6th commission's referral of a criminal, you know, a criminal referral for the Trump people. So she'll weigh in on that too. And I will also ask her about this provision that either was or was not attached to the NDAA that either Jane Mayer is correct about or Lawrence Tribe is correct about. Either way, our legal expert will be here tomorrow to explain all that stuff to us. And that's how we will finish up the week. Okay? Okay. And we'll finish up today with the news. Thanks for listening. I'll see you tomorrow. Bye.
It's time for Nicole Sandler's What's News from NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network.
Moments ago, I was standing together with her, Wife Sherelle, in the Oval Office. I spoke with Brittany Griner. She's safe. She's on a plane. She's on her way home. After months of being unjustly detained in Russia, held under intolerable circumstances, Brittany will soon be back in the arms of her loved ones, and she should have been there all along.
President Biden, this morning in the White House, announcing that Brittany Griner, the WNBA star who's been imprisoned in Russia for 10 months, was released early Thursday morning in a prisoner swap for Russian arms trafficker Viktor Bout. Yeah, the guy nicknamed the Merchant of Death. Griner had recently been moved to a Russian penal colony around 300 miles from Moscow to serve out her 9-year sentence for possession of vape cartridges containing cannabis oil. At publication time, Griner is on a plane on her way back to the U.S. But those of us who honor picket lines won't read about it in the New York Times. Some 1,100 unionized staffers at the Times are on strike today, as negotiations with the paper's management have failed to result in a new contract about 20 months after the last one expired. The walkout, which began at midnight, emptied much of the newsroom. So they're asking you to just stay off of the New York Times website for 24 hours. On a related note, Wordle was the most searched term on Google in 2022. Just know there are alternatives to the official Wordle. Try Quordle. Quordle.com. You have 9 chances to solve 4 words at the same time. In other news, the U.S. Supreme Court heard arguments Wednesday in an appeal by North Carolina Republican lawmakers challenging a decision by the state Supreme Court that threw out a House district map illegally biased against Democratic voters. The justices appeared split over whether or not to back the so-called independent state legislature theory, which basically says that state legislatures are unbound by state constitutions and state courts when enacting law governing federal elections or drawing congressional district maps. At least 3 of the court's 6 right-wing justices appeared to support it. Those would be Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch. Now, Justice Elena Kagan branded it a, quote, novel challenge that gets rid of the normal checks and balances. She says this is a theory with big consequences that would allow for the most extreme forms of gerrymandering from legislatures. Kagan's liberal colleagues on the court, Sonia Sotomayor and Ketanji Brown Jackson, appeared to agree with Justice Kagan. A broad ruling could threaten hundreds of election laws, require separate rules for federal and state elections on the same ballot, and lead to new efforts to redraw congressional districts to maximize partisan advantage. And it looks like the fate of our electoral system lies in the hands of Chief Justice John Roberts and Justices Amy Coney Barrett and Neil Gorsuch. Oy. At least 2 more items marked classified have been found, this time in a storage unit in West Palm Beach, rented by the Federal General Services Administration to temporarily house items taken as part of the former president's return to private life in 2021. The search was among at least three at Trump properties, with others at the Trump Tower in New York and another at the Bedminster Golf Club in New Jersey. Trump's lawyers immediately gave the materials to the FBI, which had previously seized classified material from Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence in Florida. It never ends. From the What Took Them So Long files, Democrats on the Senate Finance Committee and the House Oversight Committee this week sent letters to the State and Defense Departments asking for information about whether Jared Kushner's actions on Middle East policy as a Trump White House advisor were influenced by the bailout of one of his family's New York City buildings. The Washington Post, referring to some letters that they obtained, said that they concerned a deal that Kushner and his father made in 2018 with a Canadian company, Brookfield Asset Management, which agreed to a $1.2 billion 99-year lease that enabled the Kushners to avoid defaulting on a loan due the next year. The Qatar Investment Authority, a sovereign wealth fund, was an investor in one of Brookfield's investment arms. Follow the money. More disturbing news coming out of Iran. The semi-official Tasnim news agency reporting that the government executed a prisoner, Mohsen Shakari, who was arrested for participating in the anti-government protests that are happening there, and was convicted of injuring a security guard with a knife and closing off a street in Tehran. The Islamic Republic judiciary announced on Tuesday that five other people were sentenced to death as well. Over in Germany, authorities thwarted what appears to be a major plan to storm the Reichstag, that's the equivalent of our capital, in an attempt to overthrow the German Republic. Now, unlike what happened in D.C. on January 6th, German law enforcement intervened before it actually happened. At 6 a.m. Wednesday morning, German forces stormed a house in Berlin and arrested a former MP of the far-right Alternative for Deutschland. Simultaneous raids took place in 30 other locations, including a car repair shop, a carpenter studio, and in an Austrian ski resort and the Italian city of Perugia. 25 people were arrested, among them a serving soldier of the elite KSK unit, a lawyer, a pilot, a gourmet chef, and a 71-year-old prince, Heinrich VIII, who is the alleged ringleader of Reichsbürger, who had led the plans to overthrow the German state and replace it with a monarchistic order. The Reichsbürger is a racist, anti-Semitic, tax-abstaining political group whose membership is said to have grown significantly in the last year. Oy. Electricity for thousands of residents in North Carolina has been restored after a days-long outage caused by targeted gun attacks on power substations. Police say the motive behind the attacks in Moore County remains unknown and no suspects have been announced. But investigators are zeroing in on two possible threads centered around extremist behavior, writings by extremists on online forums encouraging attacks on critical infrastructure, and a series of recent disruptions of LGBTQ events across the nation by domestic extremists. Approximately 45,000 homes and businesses initially lost power in North Carolina when the outages occurred on Saturday, leaving residents without heat or lights for about 4 days. Now, in a related story, we're learning that the FBI is also investigating at least five attacks in recent months on electricity substations in the Pacific Northwest, similar to the one that caused widespread power outages in North Carolina. Stay tuned. And finally, the January 6th committee chair, Congressman Benny Thompson, told reporters Wednesday night that the panel is looking to release its final report and hold a vote on any criminal referrals on December 21st. In addition to considering a referral involving Donald Trump, the committee could offer contempt of Congress referrals for fellow members who ignored its subpoenas, for witnesses it believes lied to the investigators, and for people it believes tried to intimidate witnesses. December 21st. It's in the calendar and the popcorn is popping. And that's just a bit of what's news for now. I'm Nicole Sandler. If you appreciate these reports and the Nicole Sandler Show, I hope you'll consider making a contribution. My work is 100% listener supported, and I can't do it without your help. Find out more at NicoleSandler.com, and please click on that donate button.